Greetings and welcome to another episode of Theologically Driven, a podcast for those who want to know God through his word, have that knowledge drive their decisions. This podcast is brought to you by Detroit Baptist Theological Seminary, a seminary devoted to exalting God by expounding his word. You can learn more at dbts.edu. I'm Ben Edwards, Dean of Detroit Baptist Theological Seminary, and in this episode, we'll be discussing leading a concert of prayer. My guest this week is Dr. David Dorn, president of DBTS and senior pastor of Intercity Baptist Church. Dr. Dorn, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here again.
I think in some ways, prayer is a struggle for many believers, especially in the American context. And for churches, it often can be a struggle to have extended times of prayer. Right. And I think since being here at the church and being involved in several concerts of prayer that we have had, I find the concert of prayer seems to be a good format that allows members to stay engaged in prayer and to really have a productive and helpful time of prayer. And so I thought it'd be helpful to kind of flesh that out. But before we get into the details of the concert of prayer, I wanted to just briefly touch on something that's happening in the life of our church. At the beginning of every year, we have a week that we set aside as a prayer week. Why did you start that in the ministry of the church right here?
So I'm pretty sure our first one was in 1997. And actually the year before that, we had started a little bit with, started in that direction. I think it was 96. So I started the year preaching, actually did a series on fasting and praying. And then, I think every month we actually gave out, this is how long ago, we just talked about cassette tapes. We actually gave out a sermon on prayer and a prayer focus, and actually had challenged people to devote some time each month to fasting and seeking the Lord. So it was sort of like a annual emphasis or year-long emphasis at that point. And then somewhere during that year, I actually heard about another church that had a prayer week, and I thought, oh, that might be a great idea. Then I checked into it, and it really was, they didn't have, they didn't really do much for it. It was just called prayer week, and they had a couple things that they did. So there wasn't really, it wasn't as helpful borrowing from them as I thought. So then that's when we just started trying to piece together ours. And the basic components of it were from a Sunday to Sunday. And the goal of it was to challenge us to renew our commitment to prayer during the year personally, but also as a congregation. And then to, one of the things that I tried to stress up to that point, because it's, commitment to prayer is actually a core value expressed, that we try to live up to. And so it was one of the things that we wanted to say, the way I just sort of said it to, alliteration works for me memory-wise, right? So all of our ministries should begin and be bathed in prayer, right? So if we're trying anything that we're trying to move forward for, that that everything about the start of it should be saturated with prayer, and the ministry itself should be. And part of that was, a few years before that, even I had sort of come up with a way to challenge our church about growing that was, G-R-O-W, give God first place in everything, rely on him through simple planning and fervent praying. That was the R, right? So a part of it was that continually increasing, how are we going to really show our dependence on God? And so we came to the conclusion, if we mark off the first part of the year for a specific prayer emphasis, that's us saying to the Lord, if we're going to go into this year and see you bless, we want to start right up front that you know, we need you. We're dependent on you. So, and you know, there never was a commitment to say, hey, we're going to do this every year. It was, you know, we're doing this. And honestly, it was such a blessing, you know, that I think everybody looks forward to it, right? It's, I mean, one of the challenges I've said many times is that, I have a hard time, turning it into a program that you have to promote super hard, right? I mean, I've said it, I think the way I've said it is if the only thing that can get people to pray is if we keep adding more bells and whistles to this thing, then we've got a problem, right? I mean, the whole point is like we should know we need to pray and we want to pray, so let's just schedule opportunities to pray. And so that's now, so that means 2022 will be, you know, like the 24th or 25th time we've done it. Mm-hmm. So it's a long-standing practice of our church.
And typically when we have a week of prayer on our Wednesday night midweek service, you lead the congregation in a concert,
right,
of prayer. What is a concert of prayer? I've said that a couple of different times. That might sound strange to someone.
Right.
What do you mean by a concert of prayer?
So there's really two sources. I mean, the deepest source of it, it was Jonathan Edwards, wrote a humble attempt to call for explicit agreement in prayer among the churches about revival. The same thing had happened over in, I believe, Scotland, and then Edwards was trying to do the same thing in the colonies. You can find his whole treatise on it in the second volume of his works. So it's an interesting, I mean, it's a passionate appeal for joint prayer. I mean, it's not exegetically the best thing, right? So he's playing off the word, the Greek word, from which we get symphony, is the joining of voices. And then he's basically calling it a concert based off of that symphony kind of a thing. So, you know, it certainly wouldn't fly in terms of, you know, lexical, exegetical stuff. But the idea of praying with one accord and with one voice, right, in a concert, you're joining your voices together to make a sound, right? And I think Romans 15 talks about that. So it basically was, you know, he had sort of formed this thing. Then actually the source that was most influential on it was a book by a man named David Bryant in the 80s called Concert of Prayer, that he actually, he was responsible for putting together large prayer meetings and those types of things. And so I had been doing some reading on prayer and came across the book, and he had a format that he would use there for their concerts of prayer that they would do in these citywide prayer meeting things. And so that really sort of became the practical impetus to put together a unique format for our midweek prayer meeting, where we, you know, really wanted to spend, you know, hour to hour and 15 minutes, almost all devoted to praise and prayer.
So what is the broad structure or format then that you use for the concert of prayer?
Right. So it's changed. Right. So there's one way to look at it is the kind of praying that happens, and that might be the easiest way. So in ours, the one thing that has never changed is that we have prayer that is offered in partners and then in groups and then in the full assembly. So two people pairing up become partners, then three to four of those partners form a group. And then you've got obviously the whole assembly. So what we'll do is, and occasionally we'll have a time of like individual reflection too, right? So, but what we'll do is we'll have a time, and this is the topic or focus of the praying may shift and has shifted through the years. But there's always going to be times where they are praying together as partners, and then times where the group is all praying together, and then times where individuals are leading the whole congregation in prayer. And so we really sort of cycle through that. What it does in that way is it gives a lot, it gets everybody involved, right? So you know, I mean, honestly, the best times, you know, as leading it, the times that stirs my heart is to hear a whole auditorium full of people praying at the same time, right? So if you've got the partners praying, you know, so you basically have, you know, let's say we have 200 people here, you know, you've got 100 people at a time praying. And then, you know, and then halfway through that, the other 100 are praying. So you basically all throughout the auditorium, you can just hear people praying, or even with groups. So if you've got, you know, 200 people, you're basically, you know, you're basically running 35 groups or so. So you've got those whole groups praying. I mean, so you've got everybody praying and involved in it in that way. And that's, you know, so it's really dynamic in terms of actual praying happening. Mm-hmm. And that's what's exciting about it.
Yeah. Now, do you have any kind of set pattern in which you want to move from partners to groups to corporate and then back? And how do you structure it in that way?
So when it started, I eliminated a couple things that Bryant had in his, you know, some of which because his was set up over a longer period of time. But it also included things like there were testimony times, there was more talk, right, that I tried to streamline that down to. I talk at the beginning when I'm getting everybody organized, and it's sort of like a chaos period where we're getting everybody into partners and groups and all of that. But then once it's set, I'm basically just prompting it, moving it forward. So the original pattern was built around two big chunks. One was a section of prayer for revival. And then the other one was a section of prayer for awakening or the spread of the gospel. Those were preceded by a time of praise and dedication, right? So you're sort of preparing your heart for prayer. And then when you'd get into the revival section, you would go partners, groups, congregation. Awakening section, partners, groups, congregation. So you had those two big sections where you would cycle through that. In the dedication section, or like consecrate, where you're basically, let's ask God to help us, it would be more like individual moment of reflection and then potential prayer, sometimes prayer with partners. And then at the end, it's either the full congregation, you know, in a sort of like a last, you know, conclusion of the prayer service, either a full congregation or possibly partners again, and then we're done. So it cycles through in that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you transition between moving from partners to groups and then moving from groups to the congregation? Is there different ways that you've done that? Or is there a kind of a set pattern that you use to say, okay, now we're done with partners, we're going to move to groups? Yeah.
So the easiest way for us is actually the fellow who leads our worship plays the piano as well. So he actually stays at the piano. I'm in the pulpit. And I will just indicate to him to just start to play a few notes on the piano. And people will know then they need to wrap up that section. And he'll play a few measures basically of a song. And then I'll say, okay, for our group, we're going to focus on this. And then we'll pray. And I basically have it all charted out time-wise as what I want to do. And then I actually am writing down the time that we are actually at, because sometimes a section will go longer, and then so then I've got to adjust on the fly. So basically, I've got my little, you know, I'm keeping score, so to speak, on the timing to try and manage it well. And so essentially, it'll just, you know, he'll play a few measures. I'll say, here's what I'd like you to focus in on the prayer time for the group. We allow longer time for the group praying, and then he'll play, and then I'll say, either I've asked so-and-so to lead us in prayer, or I'll say, let's have two or three people lead us in prayer as a congregation. And usually that then is the number, right? So if I've got two people leading us prayer, when they're done, they're done. At the end of each major section, we actually usually sing a song. And usually a song that fits the theme that we were just focused on, right? So we, you know, I mean, if I go the old way, revival, it'd be some kind of a song of consecration or revival, spiritual renewal. An awakening would be some song about gospel advance or centrality of Christ. Now, the last several years, because, you know, I just want to keep it fresh, we've actually shifted away from that older format to, we tend to teach teach, at least in discipleship-wise, pray for prayer, that little acrostic, pray, praise, renewal or revival, asking, and then yielding. So the last several years, I've actually used that as the format. So we have a time of praise, then a time of spiritual renewal, and then asking. And then under the asking, I actually have had three different. So it's ask for our congregation, for our community, and for our commission. And that is, you know, so it's spiritual health and growth of our church, our outreach into our community with the gospel, and then we pray for our missionaries. So we'll actually usually give out a full list of all the missionaries we support. Tend to say, you know, have your group take one cluster or divide it globally. So this group is going to pray for all of our missionaries in Africa. This group's going to pray for our missionaries in Asia. And then they pray for them by name. And so we've tended to, you know, work through it that way. And again, doing the cycle of partners groups. So partners for congregation. So it could be partners for congregation, group for community and outreach, could be the full assembly for the missionaries, or it could be another group for the missionaries, and then do the full assembly at the yield. But something to keep it fresh, mm-hmm. Not novel, but fresh. So it's not just, you know, people are just becoming mechanical about it.
Now, when you had the two broader categories of renewal and then awakening, did you give suggestions as well, like subcategories within those? Like you mentioned for ask, you can have three categories. Right. Would you also maybe say for partners, focus on this aspect of renewal, and for groups, same kind of thing?
Yeah. So originally the focus would go from personal to congregation to broader church. Right. So in the revival or renewal section, it would be pray for each other as partners. For one time, I actually had on the screen the fruit of the Spirit. You know, pray for each other that God would build these things into your lives. Then in our groups, we actually prayed for God's reviving work in our church, that spiritual growth would be happening. Then, as an assembly, I would ask people to pray for revival among like-minded churches, right? Faithful Bible-believing churches. So we'd pray for the broader work. And then we do the same thing. Partners, pray for your own witness for Christ. And if you want to share someone you're particularly burdened with, share that and pray for them. Pray for yourself to be bold. And then for the groups, we'd pray for specific outreach things connected to our church, or I would identify a couple things that we could be praying for. And then I'd have a few people lead us praying for the spread of the gospel into our region and basically raising up workers for the harvest, those types of things. So it'd go from personal to congregational to outreach. Global. And then in the revival, it'd be personal, our church, other like-minded churches, so that we were sort of covering all of those areas.
So if a pastor or a Sunday school teacher or some kind of ministry leader wanted to try to do a concert of prayer in their ministry, do you have any suggestions both in maybe developing the format and then in leading it?
Right. Yeah, I think I think a structured format is a very good thing as a tool or a servant, not necessarily a master, right? Because I don't think you want to box it in so tightly that you don't actually have people start to feel comfortable praying. But I don't think structure is bad. I remember years ago reading about the prayer meeting revival in the middle of the 1800s when they started up. The sort of hub was New York City where it broke out, and they actually had someone with a bell, and people couldn't pray longer than 5 minutes, right? So if someone's praying and they got to the end of their time, someone rang the bell, and you were supposed to stop praying and move on. And, the two things that struck me at that point was someone praying for 5 minutes, mm-hmm. right? Because I'd watched a lot of prayer meetings over the years where you could hardly get a believer to pray for longer than a minute, minute and a half. They're going to ring the bell at five. But then also that they did not consider that to be quenching the prayer meeting. They actually considered someone sort of filibuster praying, killing the prayer meeting. And actually, if you read some of Spurgeon about what he writes in Only a Prayer Meeting, he talks about the same thing as, you know, being cautious about that. So I think having a format, having some sense of pacing to it is a good thing, right? I think giving clear and concise instructions is important. And I think sometimes our prayer meetings have suffered when, you know, I'm not as clear, right? I think I'm saying something clear, but it's really sort of fuzzy. And so people are not sure exactly what to do. So I found the more clear I can be about what I want them to do and say it as crisply as I can, that's good. And that's why sometimes what I've done is a move to actually throwing up either the bullet points of the prayer requests or verses connected to it so that they immediately know where they're going with the praying. I think what you want to do, I think personally, the clearer the focus of the praying, the more likely to have fervency. Right. When people really see and feel the burden for something, they pray more fervently for it. So that's the, you know, I think that's where you can help them. I think one of the things I've found is if you're going to have people in groups, it's probably good to have a leader appointed in each group so that there's not a lot of lag time. I think you can shape the culture of it by saying, hey, we want to spend the whole time praying. So if your group finishes before everyone else is done, you can keep praying through the group again. So give people instructions like that, because if you don't, you can find also now there's a group, you know, sort of sitting there chatting or whatever. And I think it can start to bleed out the prayer meeting pretty fast. So, I think you got to push people, because I do think this is a cultural issue that the American church is weak. We've privatized religion, and so praying in public is not always comfortable for people. And then sometimes we've got these what I would consider sort of false fronts, right? People adopting a certain tone or feeling like they have to have certain cliches and vocabulary. And I think we need to help people get past that, right? So it's not the person who can pray that sounds the best is the issue. It's actually, you know, that we're just trying to be honest before the Lord, express the burdens of our heart for His glory. And it takes time to shape it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And this is an important thing for believers to be doing and for churches to be doing in order to be healthy churches, accomplishing what God has called us to do. So thank you very much for your time here. I hope this has been a help to you. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love for you to leave us a 5-star rating. It allows other people to be able to find us more easily. You can find out more about our podcast or Detroit Baptist Theological Seminary at dbts.edu. We look forward to our next time together. Until then, keep seeking the Lord.